I want to speak about money. Money is a pervasive element in modern life, but talking about it, as Kit Howell pointed out, is generally taboo. Or rather, certain aspects are taboo. It's okay to talk about attending a seminar on investment strategies or fundraising ideas. It's okay to bemoan the cost of sending a kid to college, or lament a drop in property values. But to talk openly about how money affects our lives, how lack of it inhibits our self-confidence and makes us insecure, and how having a lot of it can make us insensitive to the plight of others or insecure in another way, all that's taboo. As one New England-born and bred congregant told me, Edith Pierpont, there are three things Mother instructed us not to discuss in polite society: health, wealth, and the facts of life. She was not alone. Another UU I know who spent decades in Big Timber, Montana, later told me in private after a thoughtless inquiry of mine never to ask the size of one's ranch. It's like asking how much money a person has, which she made clear with a raised eyebrow is simply not done. With the fellowship dinner last night and with this service today, we're kicking off our annual budget drive. During the drive, we asked people to estimate what they hope to contribute to the congregation over the course of the coming budget year. Estimates are called pledges. With an idea how much we'll take in, we can work out our budget accordingly. Usually, the budget drive is only one time of year. And in a universalist church, it's the only time that the minister ever talks about money. If you attend a Unity church or a Center for Spiritual Living, Church of Religious Science, both of which come out of Ralph Waldo Emerson as much as we do, you'll hear a lot of preaching and talking and meditations like mine this morning about money. These and plenty of other congregations regularly engage in prosperity meditations in worship, which is essentially what I invited you to think of money as energy and flowing through you, and there's plenty of it, and you can recognize the abundance and get with that. Congregants are encouraged, as I did with all of you, to make that kind of visualization and to accept it and try to internally visualize becoming increasingly prosperous. But Unitarian Universalists virtually never do these kinds of meditations. We might meditate on bringing others up from poverty, but ourselves, kind of tacky. We don't do that. And why? I mean, it's a good question. Why? Because I think we are embarrassed about money. In a year-long moral values seminar I led one year in Santa Fe, where I was minister throughout the aughts, we studied how, over the course of our UU history, American history, we've increasingly been taught to internalize and hold ourselves responsible for many things our forebears thought of as, at least partially, a collective or cultural responsibility, including money. If we end up wealthy, we've become acculturated to believe it's because of our own hard work and creativity. If we end up poor, it's because we somehow messed up. Social and political structures have nothing to do with it. If Oprah Winfrey can make $1 billion, so can you. Ambition and hard work are important, to be sure, but so are social and economic policies that benefit the well-to-do and bear down on poor people, impairing their ability to grow and thrive. We're embarrassed if we're out of money because we've been acculturated into thinking that that means we're failures. Paradoxically, we are also embarrassed if we have a lot of money. Few of us you use are what you'd call rich. Those who are tend to keep quiet about it. They leave their Mercedes at home and drive the Chevy whenever they come to the UU. Because, one, or A, they don't want to be guilt-tripped, and B, and I admit, I understand their fear, they don't want the minister walking up and asking them to reconsider their pledge, which I have been known to do. Among those who are wealthy, many are incredibly generous, not only to the church, but to other charities as well, not to mention nephews and nieces who would lack tuition for college were it not for their aunts or uncles' largesse. In one of my congregations, the largest donor, who pledged thousands of dollars more than anyone else, refused to take a position on any policy-making committee or the board of trustees. At the annual meeting, he'd sit invariably in the back where no one could see him and not say a word. Why? Because, he confided to me, if I do, others will think I'm trying to shove my weight around. What he received for his generosity, paradoxically, was disempowerment. Another significant contributor I knew back east regularly put an unmarked envelope with $100 bills in the collection plate, assuming that no one would know who put it there, because everybody knew. Both of these members were extraordinarily creative, loving, and generous people who did all they could to avoid talking about and being identified with money. Not talking about money is a Unitarian folkway, a custom. Hillary Goodrich, executive director of the Unitarian Universalist Funding Program, has spent her entire adult life raising and giving away money. Famous for having been the lead plaintiff in the case that legalized same-sex marriage in Massachusetts, Hillary is somewhat of an anomaly among UUs in that she talks comfortably about money. Growing up in Oyster Bay, Long Island, graduate of a pedigree boarding school and an Ivy League college, she's been around wealthy people her whole life. When it comes to soliciting contributions, she approaches potential donors differently depending on their gender. Men, Hillary observes, want you to be direct. Here's what we're looking for. Here's what I'm hoping you'll consider giving. Women, as a rule, prefer to be coy, discussing arts and letters with a brief reminder that, oh yes, the fundraising campaign is underway. May I share with you some of the details? Since congregations of all denominations have more women than men, should church leaders always remain coy about these matters? I think not. Money is part of life. We need to demystify and talk openly about it if we want to get free from the unconscious cultural baggage that comes with it. One of the insights of modern psychology is that whenever the prevailing culture regulates an important concern beyond the conversational pale, it does not go away. It only gets repressed, and not infrequently, our thinking about it becomes distorted and anxious. The late Barbara Gittings was a prominent activist for the rights of lesbians and gay men. As a student at Northwestern University, Gittings hunted the libraries of Chicago seeking information about homosexuality. Alas, she found little that was relevant or encouraging. The whole subject in those days, we're talking the late 40s, was quite literally in the closet. Information was buried and informants were circumspect. Thanks to open, loving, and committed people like Barbara Gittings, who spent the 50s and 60s getting accurate information published and out there, the American Psychiatric Association deleted homosexuality from its list of diagnostic mental disorders in 1973. UCLA psychologist Evelyn Hooker was another hero in this demystification process, studying openly and empirically what others sought to hush up. In virtually every case of consciousness expansion, the key to opening people's hearts and expanding thinking is getting things out of the closet and into the open. I think it's the same with money. By not talking about money, we give it more power than it deserves. The roots of Unitarian squeamishness about money are longstanding. Our Puritan ancestors built elegant, if aesthetically simple, meeting houses. One church I served, located on a New England village green, was built in 1826. There were two serious money controversies. In the 1880s, over whether to install central heating, and again around 1910, over indoor toilets. Too fancy was the criticism of those opposed to the improvements. A little later on, Grace Stammers, well into her 90s, was a regular contributor of that congregation, but she told me she stopped coming to worship when they redesigned the sanctuary in 1951, I think it was. And, you know, they had those big white candles, and they had those little brass caps to the candles. You know what I'm talking about? Too fancy, she said. This attitude is odd, it seems to me, but I've grown accustomed to it. Apparently, plainness is a UU custom, a folkway, a legacy of genteel shabbiness favored by well-educated and well-heeled Yankees, who, as we've already learned, don't talk about health, the facts of life, or money. Thanks to the likes of Barbara Giddings and Evelyn Hooker, and to the integration of universalism's strong, caring community tradition, we have learned to talk about our ailing bodies and about sex, often too late for those ailing bodies to much care, but we're still queasy about wealth. Of course, sometimes we have to talk about money, like today, the annual fundraising sermon. We have to acknowledge that institutions like ours do not run on thin air or good karma or anything of the sort. They run on money. The money freely given by our members to pay for programs, supplies, salaries, utilities, district and denominational dues, and much more. Now, institution is not a very thrilling word, I know. But what it means to me is freedom. The freedom not to keep reinventing ourselves, but rather to be part of something that has power, history, continuity, and a sustaining beauty larger than what any of us could create by ourselves. There's a non sequitur cartoon that shows a man sitting at a table on a city sidewalk with what looks like a petition and a table with a big arrow pointing at the table saying, sign up here. That's the first frame. And the second, next to the table, there's a large poster with a thermostat graphic on it and the words, join and help us meet our goal. At the top level of the thermometer is the goal, mainstream religion. And then below it, just below it, sect, faction, cult, bunch of nuts. And at the bottom, at the very bottom, handful of wackos. I kind of, it made me laugh when I saw that. I still laugh when I think about it. Now, I'm glad that 15 valiant women and men, some called them a handful of wackos, back in 1967 came together to organize a Unitarian congregation here in Fullerton. Not content to allow the UU presence in northern Orange County to remain a handful of wackos, these intrepid souls had faith that our congregation could grow and mature and adopt a regional identity. That with nurture and care, it could blossom into who we've become and continue to grow into, and on into tomorrow, becoming settled. Settled part of this community. And a settling instrument or agent in each of our lives. It's kind of cool when you think about it, a group of people getting together, agreeing to tax themselves for the purpose of organizing and promoting progressive, welcoming, and spiritual values. And doing so not with the expectation of any immediate or material returns, but in the simple faith that others would then more likely hear about us, would want to join in, and would bring their children so that they too would be exposed to the values that have inspired and sustained all of us. There's a Sufi story in which the Sultan, out riding in the countryside, comes across one of his subjects planting a vine well known to take 30 years to ripen. "Why are you planting that vine?" asks the monarch, "when chances are you'll be dead long before it bears fruit." "In that case, your majesty, someone else will enjoy the harvest, perhaps my sons and daughters, or yours." The Sultan smiled. "If years from now, when that vine ripens, both of us are still alive, please bring me some grapes, as I should very much like to taste them." The vintner weeded and pruned. Decades passed, and lo, the day arrived when his vine finally came to fruit. The Sultan was indeed still reigning. So the man gathered some grapes, put them on his nicest plate, and sought an audience with his king. Upon receiving the offering, the Sultan thanked his subject, turned to his exchequer, and said, "Go to the treasury, get a bag of gold, and give it to this man in appreciation for his foresight and generosity." A fool who was sitting in the audience ran to the grocery, bought some grapes, and took them in, expecting a bag of gold for himself. The Sultan dismissed him. It was not the grapes the monarch appreciated. It was the love and foresight that went into bringing them forth. Values that any kingdom needs if it is to survive. Any community needs if it is to prosper. They are the values that have been at the heart of our congregational effort here for nearly a half century. Efforts that will continue to bear fruit as long as we continue to weed and prune and plant new vines for those who will follow us. Will Nettleship and I enjoyed acting out my late colleague Kim Howell's imaginary dialogue with money. He excoriated it as filthy lucre, the veritable root of all evil. "You got me wrong," says money. And money is right. Because of our formative experiences, some of them deeply repressed, we project many of our own issues onto money. And incidentally, it's the love of money, not money itself, according to the book of Proverbs, that's the root of all evil. Loving money for its own sake, a pernicious form of idolatry. When there are worthy people doing valuable work who could use it creatively on behalf of far more people than only ourselves. Money actually started as a divine language of sorts, a metaphor for the divine ability to valuate. In ancient Rome, there was a temple dedicated to money, the temple of Juno Moneta. Moneta is the Roman version of the Greek goddess Mnemosyne, from whom the words money, measure, and memory all derive. It is memory that allows us to accumulate experience and assign it meaning and measure. Money is not the same as family, art, food, health, or community. But money does concretely speak of value. We communicate with money because we can put it where our mouths are. We can apportion our money to that which we find valuable. Without money, it would all be talk. Sermon on the amount? So what's the amount? That's up to you. I will say this, however. Give generously. It will come back to you. The more you pitch in physically, artistically, and financially, the more you'll get out of this congregation and out of life. This is a long-term harvest project we're engaged in here. But the fruit that is slowly ripening, the vine we are making, is exquisite, sublime. And like the Sultan's loyal subject, being part of the vine pruning winemaking team is fun. The more you contribute, the more fun and meaningful, and the clearer the mark of what you hold as valuable. As a guide in your calculations and as a model of someone learning how to talk more comfortably about money, let me say that this year the annual budget drive is asking for about an 11% increase. I hope they, you, make it, because I know how great things would be around here if we could fully fund the budget that the annual budget drive committee has worked up. I know what a shot in the arm it would be for our dedicated staff, for the whole congregation, for your coming minister, and for Fullerton, for you to do so. It would prove to yourselves and the whole community at large that you truly value this place and what it stands for. It's Chalice Circle, study and social groups. It's progressive RE for children and youth. It's affirmation. It's mission. It's purposes and principles. It's comfort and support for one another through hard times. It's education and social justice outreach in our community. The very fact that a handful of wackos can turn themselves slowly, gently, and imaginatively into a strong voice of liberal religion and progressive values in Orange County, I value that. And I invite you to gladly support it. Church, as I often told my daughter of school, is one of those things, the more you put into it, the more you and everyone around you gets out of it. It is also the kind of place where the fruit of one's labors often takes years to mature. But it does, I promise you. And there is a bag of gold in it for everyone, metaphorical and otherwise. Love comes back, always. And money in support of cherished values is love. Amen. Shalom. And so may it be.